The Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon.
Here.
Vice Chair Roach.
Present.
Ranking Member Grieco.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Beltran.
Here.
Bussada Cabrera.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Thompson. Tuck.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. As always, I want to remind everyone to please silence your cell phones. Also, a reminder for our members and presenters today, please ensure that you turn on your microphone when you are speaking and off when you are finished. That's very important. Also, request that you fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before the committee this morning. Welcome everybody back this Thursday morning. Today, we'll be considering the following two bills, HB 95, Controlled Substance Offenses, and HB 6037, Traveling Across County Lines to Commit a Burglary. The first bill we will consider, we'll take up, will be HB 95, Controlled Substances, by Chair Plakin. You're recognized. Morning.
Good morning.
Gotcha.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill this morning. By this time tomorrow morning, more than a dozen Floridians will be dead as a result of drug overdoses. In each of these tragedies, a drug dealer has made a profit from the pain of Florida families. In 1972, the legislature and governor decided that a killing by unlawful distribution of certain drugs can be first-degree murder. Over the years, a number of substances have been added to the list of drugs to which this statute applies. This bill, HB 95, is simply a clarification and modernization of that statute of 782. It does so in the following ways. First, it adds methamphetamine to the list of controlled substances subject to the statute. Second, it clarifies the statute by changing the words proximate cause to substantial factor, which is a result of conversations we've had with prosecutors around the state, which have had difficulty getting convictions, especially since most of these deaths involve multiple drugs. Third, it provides enhanced penalties for selling controlled substances within 1,000 feet of a drug treatment clinic, a sober home, or any facility that provides treatment to recovering addicts. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Plakin. Are there any questions? Ranking Member Grieco, you'll be first today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Rep. Plakin, for that explanation. And I just have a couple of questions. Really, the methamphetamine part I'm fine with. I'm focused as a former prosecutor and as a criminal defense attorney. I'm kind of focused on the proximate cause issue. In your conversations with prosecutors, did they give you any anecdotes or did they give you any fact patterns which were problematic with the proximate cause standard that's currently in law?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Particularly with multiple drugs involved in detailing which was the, use the word, substantial factor. And substantial factor now, of course, I'm not an attorney. I understand is used in a number of other areas of both civil and criminal law. So, this was written in 1972, and certain case law has been kind of bouncing all over the place with the proximate cause, providing difficulty in prosecuting a lot of these cases. But the intent of the legislature in 1972, the Democrat-controlled legislature, I might add, seemed to be that if you are delivering these substances and somebody dies, that should be a first-degree penalty. So this I would see as a clarification and modernization of the wording.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So So we didn't get any fact patterns other than the general kind of there's multiple drugs in somebody's system. So I'm a little confused about the substantial factor standard. I've been practicing in the criminal justice world for in excess of 21 years. I've actually never heard the term used. So in a fact pattern like that, let's say somebody overdoses on fentanyl, but they had cocaine in their system that their sister gave them 4 days ago. All right. Can the sister be charged with first-degree murder based upon that scenario?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, as a non-lawyer, we're getting deep in the weeds, and the Florida Sheriff's Association has representation, if you'd like, further, you know, beyond what, you know, I know. But my understanding of the difference between a substantial factor would be, for example, I think this one used with in law enforcement, if one, somebody shoots you in the knee and somebody shoots you in the heart, two bullets hit you at the same time, the shot to the knee was not a substantial factor, but the shot to the heart was. In the case of fentanyl in particular.
Chair Plankin, one of the members says they pull that microphone up just a little bit up. They can't quite hear you down there.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'd say that would be my answer.
Okay.
If you have further clarification, if the chair would like, I've got representatives from the Florida Sheriff's Association that, to your request of certain fact patterns and such, I'm sure that they could provide further clarification.
I'd love that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
They hear?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Morning, members. Bob Cortez, Seminole County Sheriff's Office. In your case, Representative, what you're asking for, there has been a pattern. For example, in Seminole County, we have charged over 30 people with overdose deaths. And the prosecutors usually get to about 90-95% of the cases, and they always get hung up with the medical examiner's determination of proximate cause. Because the proximate cause, as you know as a lawyer, is the but-for test. It's the but-for is that if you removed fentanyl, would the cocaine would have killed them? And most of the times, the medical examiners do not want to put that forward because they'll say, well, the person died of an overdose, but he died of a heart attack. So with the substantial factor, the medical examiners can have a little bit more clarity as to determine the mixture of drugs in the system could have caused the death, not just a single fentanyl. If you took out the fentanyl, would the methamphetamines or other drugs that he had in his system, would have that killed him?
You're right.
Chair, I'm gonna chew on that. I'm gonna process. I might come back.
I don't have. Okay, go ahead, Representative Lerner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's my first session, and we heard this bill last year, but this is the second version that we heard. I was hoping we could just step back and tell us the differences between what we heard last year and this year when it, as it pertains to this bill.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I followed last year, but I've been gone all summer. I don't remember the details. This is through conversations with the various stakeholders that we came up with the bill that we have today. I mean, I don't think it's relevant what we did last year. This is
My specific question is what's different in this bill? Not how, well, like, not why is it different? Just like substantial, like what changed?
You're recognized, but they're still saying like you can't hear down there, Representative Bush.
Again, I don't recall. I was just reminded it was the culpable negligence section.
Okay. Follow, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized, Rick. Representative Lerner.
Thank you. And again, not being a lawyer on the panel, I'm hoping we can dive into the punishments for this crime. So now that we're making these capital murder cases, what is the penalty for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're actually not changing that. That was done in 1972 by the legislature, decided that these should be or can be capital offenses. Capital offenses, as you probably know, could be from life in prison. They could be the death penalty. However, that being said, the fact pattern or aggravating circumstances in a drug overdose, there's never been a death penalty case using this statute, and it would be hard to imagine a death penalty conviction based on dealing drugs.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
exactly. Thank you. So did I hear you right that there's a mandatory minimum for life in sentence for these cases, though? There'd be a mandatory minimum because it ranges from life in prison to the death penalty.
Rick asks.
Well, first-degree felony, I believe, is 25 to as much as life. Yes, it could be life.
Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. This is my first time on this committee, and we've had quite a bit of conversation about our prison population and what effect would this bill have on prison beds in state prisons.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't believe that that was addressed in the staff analysis, so I could only speculate. If there were more first-degree convictions, then using the substantial factor, then I suppose it could increase. But I suspect it would be de minimis, because if they weren't convicted under the first degree, they could be have a lower charge. It would be less time in prison. So you probably have, this is speculation, the same number of convictions, but perhaps some of them would be longer sentences.
Follow up.
Thank you very much. With regard to the death penalty, you indicated that you can't imagine that providing a substance to someone who dies would result in the death penalty. How many instances are you aware of where people have gotten the death penalty for providing, if you could conclusively say that this is the cause of death, how many people have gotten the death penalty?
Sure. Since the statute was passed in about almost 50 years ago, my research has shown it's been zero.
Zero. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Back to Representative Grieco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Plakin, I've been jammed up the last couple of days, so I haven't had enough time to do the full research. But are you familiar with anywhere else in the criminal statutes in Florida where substantial factor is used? And either yourself or someone from the Sheriff's Department, if somebody can enlighten me.
Recognized here.
Again, not being a lawyer, haven't studied the rest of the statutes, the five volumes for those words, my understanding is that in civil law, that that's used quite frequently.
So, follow up?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, so civil law, and remind that this is what I do with my juries, is that civil law is like the tilting of the standards are different, right? Because you've got, you're talking about money, or you're talking about something, property, something along those lines. And then in criminal law, you're talking about a higher standard because you're talking about someone's liberty. And in this case, someone's life. Wouldn't you agree that it might be a little concerning that we're applying civil standards to criminal law where the issues are more serious and where the stakes are a lot higher?
Recognize.
Well, they may be used more often or mostly or all in civil law, but the word substantial factor have been used and defined through the courts for quite some time in civil law. So the words don't change whether it's civil or criminal law. What does change is the preponderance of the evidence or beyond a reasonable doubt. And in criminal law, that would still apply. So this is really the substantial factor is, and again, my understanding, it's quite a bit in civil law. The words don't change. It has the same meaning. So I don't see a reason why it shouldn't be in criminal law, and it may be, I'm not sure, but why it shouldn't be in criminal law, especially since the standard of a conviction is still the same.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Back to Representative Learning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just as a quick follow-up, so I was checking with committee staff, and I think we verified that the mandatory minimum for capital murder crime would be a life sentence. So the option would be life or death in these cases. And I know your bill doesn't open the sentencing side of this equation. I think that's where I'm really getting hung up on this bill is when we're adding meth, I'm good with that. I think you're closing the loophole. I voted for it last year. I think that makes a ton of sense. We're adding meth and making it easier to prosecute it and adding some enhanced penalties based on proximity. It's starting to get in a gray area where I'm worried about some of the horror stories we've heard on the felony murder statutes in general, where people, are caught up in these cases.
I don't want to slow you down, but do we have a question?
I promise. There's a question here. Would you be open, because I'm going to hear this again in the next committee too. So is there an openness to relook at those mandatory minimums as it pertains to the sentence in the where we can add an amendment on those sentencing guidelines on the felony murder cases for this exact example?
Recognized.
Well, I'm always open to having conversations, but this statute has been on the books since 1972 by the Democrat-controlled legislature at the time. So there seems to be, or at least was, within the Democrat Party, and now the Republican Party, that there should be a first-degree felony option for if you are part of killing someone, use it by dealing them drugs for profit. I hope everybody would agree with that. And I'm not going to go into all the evil that these people do. I'm sure we've all had loved ones that have been impacted by this. There's more than a dozen Floridians are dying, and these people don't care about the pain and death that they're putting upon families. So I am good with first degree for someone that causes a death of one of our loved ones in some cases. I'm fine with that, and it seems like the 1972 legislature was as well.
Anybody else? Can I ask you a question? If I shot Mr. Cortez in the head and Whitney shot Mr. Cortez in the heart, could we both be charged with murder?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question, I think. I'd probably have to refer to somebody at the Florida Sheriff's Association. I've never heard of that fact pattern before. I know you being in law enforcement, maybe you have, but it seems like both of those things would kill you. So,
exactly.
In my opinion, not being a lawyer, they should both be charged.
Thank you. That answers my question. I don't see any more questions. We'll now move to amendments. I have one amendment, barcode 937493. Chair Plakin, you're recognized to explain that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a technical amendment suggested by staff, which changes some of the third-degree statute using the substantial factor language as well. So it's just essentially to line up the statute across, line up the wording across the third-degree statute as well. That's the amendment.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, I have no appearance cards on the amendment. Any public testimony on the amendment? Seeing none, are there any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment. All right. Representative Plakin, you are recognized to close on this amendment.
Wave close.
Thank you, members. If you favor the adoption of Representative Plakin's amendment, signify by saying yay. Yay. All opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We'll now be back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill as amended? And I have some appearance cards. I have Karen Woodall, Southern Poverty Law Center, Action Fund, Waves in Opposition, Lauren Jackson, Seminole County Sheriff, Waves in Opposition, Support. Okay. Got some more under there? Ida Escamani, Florida Immigrant Coalition Incorporated, Waves in Opposition. Ida Escamani again, Florida Rising, Waves in Opposition. Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, Waves in Opposition. Matt Dunnigan, Florida Sheriff's Association, Waves in Support. Jorge Chamizo, if I pronounced that correctly, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, Waves in Opposition. Buddy Jacobs, Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association, Waves in Support. Adwan Whitfield, Democracy Reform Manager. He wants to speak. Is he here? OK. Michelle Rothwell wishes to appear. Come forward. Good morning. Welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Michelle Rothwell, and I'm a voting resident of the state of Florida. I appreciate you giving me the chance to speak this morning. I oppose HB 95. The proposal to add meth or methamphetamine to the felony murder rule is not a good option, in my opinion. This is because the same strategy has been used on drug policies in the states for the last four decades. Ladies and gentlemen of this committee, in 40 years, this has not worked. It seems to me this change would do nothing but try to fix the state's drug problem, but it will only lead to more people being incarcerated for life and possibly the death row. With the issues the FDC is already having at this time with staffing, at no point in the future does it look like it will be resolved quickly. Why do you just want to incarcerate more people? A little bit about my story. I have a son, and he's in the Department of Corrections. He was 17 years old and convicted to 25 years, first-time offender, after being set up by an informant. My son had never been in trouble before, and now he'll be 57 when he gets out. We're warehousing people. We're not giving them the education. We're not giving them the tools. We're not helping these people fix this problem. We're just warehousing more people, and that's just not the answer. So I'm asking you to please oppose HB 95. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Laurette Phillipson. Good morning, ma'am. You're recognized.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Laurette Phillipson. I'm a voting resident in the state of Florida. I sat here last year as this bill was presented as HB 325. I opposed this bill then, and I oppose this year's HB 95. To add methamphetamine to the felony murder rule is not an option, in my opinion. With the crisis that FDC describes as they're operating under, why would anyone in all good conscience want to warehouse more people? We need to be saving money and stop coming up with ideas on how to incarcerate more people. The present drug laws are not working in the state of Florida. And now you want to add another drug to the list of felony murder. When you are charging the individuals with felony murder, are you also going to be charging the pharmacist who sold the Sudafed and or other ingredients, knowing that it is used to make meth? If you're going to charge the seller of the drug, you need to include all of those that are involved. Substance abuse is a mental health and medical issue. Why are we not looking at ways to continue to combat drugs in this state rather than lock up more people for life? I asked last session, and I will ask again. I urge all members of this committee to ask a sponsor of this bill to show you what research, reports, data, and any evidence he had for this bill. I will be more than glad to send each of you documentation that focuses on providing treatment that works rather than locking up more people. I ask you to do the right thing and not support this bill any further. We have too many people incarcerated under the felony murder rule. We do not need to add any more. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, we'll hear from Nisha Rose Hines. Nisha Rose Hines. You're recognized. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of this committee. At a time where police chiefs and the Department of Corrections are speaking to this very legislature about staff shortages in crowded facilities, we as the ACLU of Florida, who I'm here representing, oppose any bill that will fuel the prison industry by increasing sentences and pursuing more death penalty cases. The bill makes it easier to impose a death penalty and life imprisonment on individuals without proof that the person's conduct was the most direct cause of the harm here, a death of a user of methamphetamine or any higher level drugs. Death penalty is the ultimate punishment, and it should be tough to receive, especially since our system is not perfect. Death penalty cases have the most appeals, cost the most money for the state to prosecute. We should be making it easier for this, we should not be making it easier for this extreme costly punishment to be applied. The bill analysis mentions the Governor DeSantis's task force on opioid abuse. The task force asked to include methamphetamines as an increased penalty, but it never asked to remove the proximate cause requirement for death caused by an unlawful distribution of a controlled substance. Additionally, the location issue, where it enhances penalties for the sale of a controlled substance within 1,000 feet of a substance abuse treatment facility, while that is a great idea and suggested by the task force, this specific bill goes too far. The language in this bill includes a variety of facilities, and I implore this committee, before voting on this bill, that you apply this bill to a map of your district and see if there is anywhere in your highly populated areas that would not receive an increased penalty. In highly populated urban areas, there may be a multitude of these listed healthcare facilities that would lead to almost any drug dealing in that area to receive increased prosecution. Individuals in urban areas should not be prone to increased penalties merely because where they live, there is a multitude of the facilities listed here that garner an increased penalty. I plead with the committee, which is dedicated to criminal justice and public safety, to ensure that the bills that they pass will actually, in effect, when passed and apply to the people of Florida, improve criminal justice and promote public safety, not just appear to do so. The ACLU of Florida feels this bill is bad for Florida, and we urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. I see no more appearance cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll now move into debate. Members, we're now in debate. I'll start with Representative Casello.
Thank you, Chair. The question I would have to ask is that this enhanced penalty, would it deter these people from selling drugs? Would it make somebody think twice about selling these drugs if they knew they could possibly get the death penalty for it? I would think so. And if somebody maybe gave it a second thought before they went out there on the street selling, that we might actually bring down the cases of these arrests. So I'm going to be up on this bill. I think it's a good bill. And I think, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Ranking Member Grieco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Lakin, I get what you're trying to do. I understand it. I have an appreciation for this space of the criminal statutes. My concern is I have several concerns with this. Talking about what I was asking you questions about. So, the issue regarding taking language that is essentially solely used in toxic tort cases and medical malpractice cases and bringing it into the Florida criminal statutes, it gives me great pause. And I do use that example that in civil cases, we talk to juries all the time about it, that the standards in criminal cases are much different than they are in civil, and starting to combine the nomenclature is not something I'm comfortable with, and I'm going to be down on the bill as a result of it. There's another piece to this, which was referenced by one of the speakers just now, is the 1,000-foot radius that we're creating regarding specifically certain healthcare facilities. And I guess if I could go back in time a few minutes, I'd be asking you whether or not anybody's done a study as to, in urban areas, what type of map does this create? You know, 1,000 feet, 1,000 feet from a school, we have that. 1,000 feet from different facilities, we have that already. But 1,000 feet from a healthcare facility, I don't know what the map's going to show on that. And to remind everybody, 1,000 feet is about 3 1/3 football fields. That's a long distance to start enhancing penalties. You know, with all the talk, even from the previous presidential administration about, you know, changing the way we think about criminal justice and changing the way we think about nonviolent drug offenses, that in particular doesn't even address the death of somebody. That's just the sale. And I think we're going in the wrong direction. We've been spending the last few years in a bipartisan manner rethinking the way we approach nonviolent drug offenses, and here we are enhancing penalties again. So I don't know if this is to we're going to be changing the dialogue, and if this is kind of a precursor as to some of the other bills that we're going to see in this session. But for this to be the first bill that we're hearing and we're enhancing penalties on nonviolent drug offenses, it concerns me greatly as the ranking member. It concerns me greatly as a member of the criminal justice community, and therefore I'm going to be down on the bill.
Thank you, Ranking Member. I'll now recognize Representative Beltran in debate.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for this robust discussion we've had today. I'm going to be honest. I didn't come up to session or to committee weeks thinking that we were going to increase penalties or create new crimes or make it easier to prosecute crimes. There's a lot of people in the prison system, and especially for drug or property crimes, I kind of come with a presumption that we would try to find alternative ways of addressing those issues. All that said, there's a reason why drugs are illegal. And there's addiction, and then there's the fact that people overdose and die on them. And that's probably the most compelling public policy reason why we outlaw drugs, or frankly, why we do anything else up here in Florida. And I'm aware of these problems in adjudicating these death cases, where overdose death cases. I've talked to prosecutors and judges back home in Hillsborough. It's difficult to prosecute the crimes. And the reason is because when someone overdoses on drug X, it's unfortunately not usually the only bad choice they made that day. Usually there's multiple substances. There may be alcohol. There may be an underlying health condition. There may be something else they were doing that day. And proving proximate cause of any particular drug, I'm told by prosecutors and judges, and I've reviewed the dockets, is very difficult. What you have is you have the medical examiner coming in and saying, this is a substantial factor, that's a substantial factor, this is a substantial factor. And frankly, the prosecutors are getting jury convictions anyway. And those are a lot of times being upheld in post-trial motion and on appeal. So if we're going to prosecute those crimes, I think we need to give drug dealers and the rest of the populace fair notice, because the fact is these crimes are being prosecuted and the standard is being massaged anyway in the courts because people want to prosecute these very serious crimes. And I think it's better to give everyone fair notice, and you know what the penalty is. If you think the penalty is too high, that might be a discussion we have at a future committee stop. So now, I'll be honest, this bill takes us very close to strict liability for drug dealers. But frankly, if there's anyone I think deserves to be subject to a strict liability standard for the product that they're selling, it's the drug dealers. And I do hope that the prosecutors use prosecutorial discretion. And if I hear somebody's indicted that they're seeking the death penalty for one of these, you shoot someone in the head, you deserve the death penalty. You hurt some vulnerable person, you deserve the death penalty. You deal drugs and somebody dies from that, not sure that's an appropriate use of the death penalty. So I hope the prosecutors don't abuse this statute, because then maybe we'll be back up here doing something else. But as it is, I think it's a good bill. Thanks for everyone's work on it.
Thank you, Representative Beltran. Representative Learned, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Chairman Flaken, too, for the conversation for the bill. I know, you know, I'm very torn having heard this bill last year. I have no problem adding meth to the list. I voted for it last year. I think I've heard that echoed by my colleagues that we want to close that loophole. That makes all the sense in the world. What I would point out, though, and what we've seen for 40 years of our drug war in this country, is that these enhanced penalties haven't stopped people from using the drugs. By by the very arguments we're making, we're saying that we're going to add meth to a list of drugs. Well, then show me the fact that these enhanced penalties on those other drugs decreased their usage. And I haven't seen any of that. If contrarily, cocaine and other drugs are being used at rates, and they have this provision because they don't have you were adding this to that list. And so right now, I haven't seen any evidence that says that this is going to stop the crime. You know, half of us are going to leave this room, and in 30 minutes, we're going to go to the Judicial Appropriations Committee that you're the chairman of, and we are going to sit there and hear testimony and all agree that we need to give the Department of Corrections $200 million more dollars to fix the crisis in our prison system. And in this committee, we're making their job harder by putting more people in the system. And again, this is my complaint with this bill, and I really, really, really hope we can work together between here and the next committee stop, which is, this is a good, I'm okay with the bill. I'm really okay with the bill. My problem is the mandatory minimum life sentence that comes with this bill, right? So why don't we add an amendment where we look at that mandatory minimum statute and let's let judges and juries look at the facts of the case. Let's let them do their job. Let's add these enhanced penalties, but let's allow some flexibility in the sentencing of those cases so we are not required to hold these people for the rest of their life if we don't execute them. And I really hope you're open to that amendment and something we can work on together.
Thank you, sir. I don't see any other members in debate. Representative Plakin. You're recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To address Representative Learned, a few of his comments, I'm not sure if people have stopped using or if this would be an impediment to using, but it may be an impediment to selling, understanding that the law will be more clear and that these penalties could apply. You talk about flexibility needed. We already have that in the system. Because in a criminal case, you have adversarial process. You have the prosecutor and the defense attorney or public defender that, depending on the strength of the case, they can plead these cases down to lesser penalties. And I suspect that that's what happens quite a bit. But I think it's a good idea to leave it in the toolbox that they could be charged with this type of crime. And perhaps it could be an impediment to a drug dealer, a dealer of death, that may think twice before doing some of these things. To Representative Grieco, Ranking Member Grieco, comment, I was told that Burrage versus United States used in case law proximate cause. I just found that a few minutes ago, but before the next stop, I'll have a further understanding of the words proximate cause in case law in other places. And I'm told it's also used in homicide cases quite frequently. In terms of the prison population, it is true. We're having our committee meeting today. But in the staff analysis, it had fiscal impact, none. And then it says an indeterminate fiscal. Putting those two things together, my belief on that is that it would be a very small fiscal, a very small increase in prison population because of not in the number of convictions, but in the length of stay. I've always thought, and this is my 12th session, as legislators, one of the key things we should always try to do is provide clear laws. And sometimes, like in 1972, this law being passed, in some sense, the courts have taken control of the original words as written in 1972. So now looking back at all these years and seeing prosecutions go forward and sometimes fail, I think it's our responsibility to provide clear laws. So this is simply an attempt to try to clarify the law now using decades of examples in case law. Again, to reiterate, in 1972, under Governor Askew and the Democrat legislature, it was decided that first-degree felonies could apply in these type of cases. So we're not changing that. All we're doing is providing further clarification so that the courts won't be deciding this, so that prosecutors and defenders can use these laws and provide clear guidance, and drug dealers will have more clear guidance as to what their responsibilities may be. Thank you for hearing the bill today, and I hope you all support it.
Thank you, Chair Plakin. Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 95 as amended and announce the vote.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Boussada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
No.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
No.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Tuck?
Yes.
14 yeas and 4 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 95 reported favorably. We'll now move on to HB 6037, traveling across county lines to commit a burglary by Representative Snyder. Representative Snyder, you are recognized to present HB 6037.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Vice Chair Roach and fellow members of the committee. Good to be before you this morning. I'd like to start by reading an article from the Sun Sentinel that says, in recent months, law enforcement officials in Central Florida have reported a sudden upsurge in smash-and-grab incidents at state parks, ball fields, community centers, churches, gyms, daycare centers, and other facilities. These crimes appear to be connected to South Florida-based organized crime rings known as felony lane gangs, officials say. South Florida is so densely populated, it's almost like they have run out of places to commit crimes. So just going back in time, for a lot of you, if this bill sounds familiar, it's because it is. Nearly every member on this committee voted in support of a similar effort that was passed on the floor last year, but unfortunately did not make it out of the Senate. And so just to provide some context, the way it used to be is that individuals would go out to commit a burglary looking for various stolen properties that they could take back to their local pawn shop or some other form of local dealer to sell it and turn it for a quick buck. But criminals are wise, and so they have changed their tactics and have realized that through the internet and other means of being able to move stolen property, they've begun this process of leaving their county of residence or their home where they might be known to local law enforcement, traveling around the state, and committing these types of burglaries. And again, the thing I want to emphasize is that more often than not, what they're targeting and what they're actually stealing are firearms that are then taken back into their community to perpetrate gun violence. So back in 2014, the state legislature passed Section 843.22, which is the traveling burglar statute. But what we found quickly through the courts is that there is a glitch in that bill. There's basically a double threshold. And so what we're doing today is simply removing this catch that has prevented any prosecutors from being able to successfully bring this charge. And so with that, members, I welcome any questions and hope to have your support today.
Thank you, Rep. Snyder. Are there any questions? Ranking Member Grieco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Snyder. And I apologize for not getting back to your text yesterday. I was out of town. I'm going to ask a couple questions about the amendment that's being made. And it looks like it's just deleting language. Is this just a repealer bill?
Correct.
Follow up.
Thanks.
I'm reading the language here that's currently in statute, which is if a person who commits a burglary travels any distance with the intent to commit the burglary in a county in this state other than the person's county of residence, then it gets enhanced. And you have taken out the language that says if the purpose of the person's travel is to thwart law enforcement attempts to track the items stolen in the burglary. So I guess my question is, if I live in Miami-Dade County, and let's say I go to Broward County for dinner, and then on the way driving around in Broward County, I decide to burglarize a home. am I going to have an enhancement because of the way this is now reworded?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that specific scenario, I would say no, because that is, again, up to the state to prove that the intent of the travel was specifically to commit the crime. And so, again, there's a couple of examples. If you're out on vacation, not in your county of residence, I don't believe that that would apply. This is specific to that intent. And what we have found is that through law enforcement's ability to track these individuals, they have the means and the methods to determine that. And so whether that's through a variety of different surveillance techniques, that will be on them to prove that the reason that they got up and left their county of residence was to go commit the burglary.
Understood. Thank you.
Seeing no one else in questions, are there any amendments? I see no amendments. We'll now move into public testimony. I have Karen Woodall, Southern Poverty Law Center Action Fund, waves in opposition. Matt Dunnigan, Florida Sheriff's Association, waves in support. Ida Escamani, Florida Immigrant Coalition, Incorporated, waves in opposition. Ida Escamani, Florida Rising, waves in opposition. Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, waves in opposition. Michelle Rothwell wishes to appear. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Once again, I oppose 6037. And
pull that mic down. He's so tall.
I know. Kind of.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. I oppose to 6037. We do not need to look at putting enhancement on already existing outdated criminal laws. We should be doing as rehabilitating, educating, and training programs. These people who are incarcerated at the time are coming home. They're going to be your neighbor. They're going to be my neighbor. I'd like to think that the presently incarcerated can leave prison with the tools that they need to excel in society. Stop finding ways to warehouse more people who are already in the system. I'm asking you to please not support 6037. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next is Laurette Phillipson.
Morning again. Sorry, trying to get my... Good morning, Chair, committee members. Thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you today. I am opposed to HB 6037. This bill, if passed, will create longer sentences for burglaries across county lines. Think of it this way. You reside in one county, you go two blocks over, and you're now in another county. You commit a burglary. Without ever intending to, you have crossed into another county. The county lines are so ambiguous, you do not even realize you've reached another county. HB 6037, if passed, wants to enhance these burglary charges. People serving long sentences place a major strain on public budgets and have cumulative effects on the correctional population. People serving long sentences are stacking up in prison. Just ask FDC. They will explain the crisis they are operating under with the present incarcerated population. Reforms targeting people convicted of nonviolent offenses are necessary first steps in rejecting the tough on crime policies of the past. We do not need to be adding additional years to people. We need to work on rehabilitation and stop warehousing people for profit. Good sound bites don't always make good policy. A coherent plan for reform is long overdue. I'm asking you not to support 6037. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, we'll hear from Nisha Rose Hines. Recognized.
Good morning again, Chair and members of the committee. As I stated before, at a time when police chiefs are coming to this legislature to inform you of their shortages in staff and monetarily, we at the ACLU of Florida oppose any bill that will fuel the prison industry, increase sentences, this bill at a time when we need to be working towards safely reducing prison populations, as you all know from the presentations that were presented to you, this bill would increase it. The staffing needs that the FDC has come and talked to you about will not be addressed positively by increasing people's penalties merely for arbitrarily crossing a latitude or longitude line. People don't know the separation between counties when they go out to commit some of these crimes. They're not intentionally crossing county lines. So removing the requirement that the intent to cross county lines be there just puts more people into increased penalties. As I said, we at the ACLU of Florida do not support anything that would increase jail populations, both the amount of time that people are in there and the amount of people there. The funds we would save by not passing this legislation and not warehousing individuals at double and triple the sentence length could be used to rehabilitate those who are already in our prison systems and address the root cause of the crimes that we are addressing here today. Address recidivism by investing in education and vocational training, and address drug addiction and other mental health programs with the funds that would be used to simply warehouse more individuals in public facilities. Taxpayer dollars should be used to make the future better and brighter for all Floridians, not to warehouse individuals with no plan to help them when they return to society. As I said, we at the ACLU of Florida oppose this bill, and we urge you to vote against it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Members will now move to debate. I see no one else to an appearance card or wishing to speak from the audience. We'll now move to debate. So any members in debate? Representative Thompson, you can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a former college administrator. I'm an academician, and I know that there's a direct correlation between lack of education and marketable skills and incarceration. And the bill that we just heard, when I first looked at it, I thought I could support it because adding methamphetamine is not an issue. However, what I think we need to be doing instead of enhancing penalties, et cetera, is eliminating mandatory minimums, giving the members of the judiciary more discretion. And we certainly need to be investing in education and rehabilitation and helping people before they get to prison. One of the questions that I asked in the very first meeting of this committee, when we were told that there was an expectation that there were going to be increased numbers in prisons, I asked, what can we do to prevent that? Is it a foregone conclusion? And because I never got an answer, and it seems to me that we are just resigned to warehousing people on the back end rather than investing in them on the front end, I have problems with this bill as well as the one before. And because of that and not getting an answer with regard to alternatives, I will be down on the bill. Thank you for bringing it.
Representative Chambliss.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I did support this bill last year, and I do think that it's important to acknowledge that this problem does exist, that there are individuals that intentionally leave their area and go and intentionally commit robberies in other areas because it's smart. It's wise. It's effective. Like, it does happen. It is, as a matter of fact, I would even go so far as to say that it probably should be acknowledged that you probably could link it to literally a criminal enterprise that intentionally goes to specific counties, to specific neighborhoods that have a particular population and specifically robs those areas. I'll give you an example. Kendall, Miami-Dade, Florida. It is a target for out-of-state individuals to come and, out-of-county individuals to come to target and to rob for specific things that are known to be in that area. I think that should be acknowledged, and we should all, you know, just understand that that just makes sense. However, unfortunately, I can't support this bill this year, and it doesn't have to do with the fact that that exists. It has more so to do with the fact that as we're seeing a trend in what we call concerns of overcriminalization, right? Overpopulating the criminal justice system. And I think that more work should be done to make sure that we're adequately identifying proper sentencing. And so what's 5 years today and 10 years tomorrow, that 5 years does matter. And I think that we should, you know, as we're going through this session and this legislature, looking at these type of bills, ask ourselves, is there another solution than that extra 5 years, as an example? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I'll go back to Ranking Member Grieco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be down on the bill, and I'm going to kind of break some things down for the folks, you know, the millions watching at home and the few that are here. Today, burglary is a level 7 offense. And for those who don't know what that means that if you have no criminal history whatsoever, your bottom of the guidelines is 21 months in state prison with a maximum of 15 years, depending on what you burglarize. That is a lot of prison time for somebody who's never been arrested for anything in their lives. You could go to prison bottom of the guidelines. That means that if you plead up to the court, you know, the state attorney doesn't deviate, you're talking 21 months bottom of the guidelines. And now because you cross county lines, and I heard things about snatch and grabs and robberies and guns, this bill doesn't address any of that. It doesn't address snatch and grabs, which is a type of robbery. Robberies are completely different. Burglaries are committing a crime inside somebody's car or inside somebody's house, going into their car, going into their house with the intent to commit a crime therein, usually theft. Okay, that is a burglary. Houses get burglarized, people get robbed. So when you hear about snatch and grabs and robberies and guns, that has nothing to do with any of this. This has to do with people who are either breaking into cars or going into cars that are unlocked or going into houses or going into businesses. That's a crime, and it should be, and you should be punished for that. There are already guidelines in place. I don't see how crossing a county line is something that should be raising enough eyebrows where we're going, again, in the wrong direction. We are going in the wrong direction when it comes to the way we are talking about and thinking about the criminal justice system in the state of Florida. And for that, I am going to be down on the bill.
Thank you, sir. Now I recognize Representative Bush in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the sponsor of the bill, let me just say I'm going to be up on the bill, but I'm going to be asking that you be amenable to discuss some other types of preventive measures that we can address why these crimes are being committed. You know, crime committed in Dade County, whether it's in Dade County or whether it's in Broward, is crime. And someone is going to suffer in the process. I've watched the families who loved ones are incarcerated, they are suffering, and the ones who commit the crime as well. So therefore, a crime is a crime, whether it's in the 67 counties that we reside in this great state of Florida. Like I supported the last bill, however, I told the sponsor we're going to work on the sentencing guidelines because that is a concern. I have a great population of individuals in my district that are incarcerated. Matter of fact, when I get back to my district, I'm going to be dealing with some families and some issues that's pertaining to incarceration. So if you're amenable, I would like to work with you to hope that we could come up with some preventive measures so that we can begin to try to address this in a way that we'll have a win-win situation. You know, I could tell you drugs, crime, I've seen it over the last 40 years, and I can tell you is reaping havoc, not only on our communities, but on our families. I've seen it happen with individual families from a collective standpoint. So I'm about trying to find a solution. And I know what drugs have done. I've known individuals who I help eulogize who've had overdoses and what that does to that family. So if we can work together in terms of coming up with some amendments or some other kinds of ways of how we can lessen that prison population, because warehousing certainly is not the solution. And I don't have a solution, but I'm willing to work with those who want to work toward that solution. With that being said, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Rep. Bush. Rep. Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep., for this good bill. To my mind, the purpose, notwithstanding we've talked about the weight of increasing penalties for crimes on the last bill, but the purpose of this bill is, and frankly of this statute that we're amending, is it's harder to catch someone if they're not where you would think they would be. And therefore, we enhance the penalties to maintain deterrence. And here we're taking away an element that is problematic to prosecute, and frankly doesn't really go to the harm that's being caused or to the penological purposes of this statute. To use Ranking Member Grieco's example, I don't care if someone went out to dinner and then decided to commit a burglary, or they went to the other county to commit a burglary and then they got hungry on the way home. I really don't care. The crime is the same. The point is they intended to commit the burglary, and that's what we're punishing, and we're punishing it more severely because it's harder to prosecute. So it doesn't really matter. If I'm going to go home today, I want to drive through Chairman Brannon's district. If I commit a burglary there, I have a very good reason for going through. I'm trying to get home to my family. I committed a burglary there. I should be punished more severely. No one would suspect until I just said that it would have been me. But the point is I think we could go further. I think we could get rid of that you traveled with the intent to commit the burglary. All I care is that you intended to commit that burglary. I don't care whether you traveled or you traveled because you were trying to escape punishment or what you were doing. So you've done in this bill something very clever, which is you're increasing the effect of the law through a repealer by removing language, which is great as legislative craft. It's a great use of the English language. But if you do want to work this a little bit more, you'd probably have to, I guess you could probably strike some more. If you want to work it at another committee stop, I'd be happy to chat with you. But thank you for the bill, and thanks for the robust debate.
Anyone else? I see no one else. I will add one thing. Real story, real history, real life on the streets. Rural counties really have suffered, especially those in proximity to large urban areas. I know in my county, we were adjacent to Jacksonville, and we were literally, they wore us out. We would have weeks and weeks of home burglaries, and could not figure out who was doing it. And oftentimes it was coming from that rural, that urban area. And in the days before computers and all of that, it was hard to track those pawn shops in those other towns. So it was an issue. We had one group that was so terrible with it, they finally brought a U-Haul out. They were doing so good. And they ran from us. They ran eastbound, the westbound lane on the interstate, property falling out of the back of the truck is as fast of a high-speed chase as you can have in a U-Haul, which is about 50 miles an hour. But it led to a large ring of burglars who were not only hit in our county, but several other surrounding counties. So it has been an issue. It has been a problem. It's not an imagined problem. It's a real issue, especially for those small counties surrounding those urban areas who often are targets. Anyone else besides me? Seeing none, Representative Snyder, you are recognized to close on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to go through a couple points briefly. I appreciate you sharing that story. And Rep. Beltran, I believe I did see Rep. Brannon texting Sheriff Atkinson, giving him the heads up that you might be driving through today. But I certainly would be open to continuing that conversation with you as well as with you, Representative Bush. I know you're a tireless advocate and always open for that conversation and certainly do welcome it. Ranking Member Grieco, just to clarify something I said earlier, it was the smash and grab to be able to commit the burglary, not the snatch and grab. So I appreciate you clarifying the difference between the theft and burglary, but when I opened, that was what I said. It was the smash and grab, not the snatch and grab, which you are correct. That would be different. And then Rep. Chambliss, I thought I had you there as a prime co for a second, but I understand the change of heart. And then lastly, Representative Thompson, I could not agree more with you that a child's zip code should never determine the quality of the education that they receive. And so certainly would love to have that discussion with you further and work with you in that lane. And also for those that came for public testimony, that's what this process is all about. So with that, members, I would humbly ask for your support. And with that, I close, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Rep. Snyder, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 6037 and announce the vote.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
No.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
No.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Tuck?
Yes.
14 yeas and 4 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 6037 reported favorably. Members, I see no further business this morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the lively debate. And Representative Maney moves we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.